Shortly after, another troop of soldiers came. They were Federalistas Federales. And when they saw that the family had hardly anything to offer, they severely beat up Efrain's dad. And when they learned that they also had given it to revolutionaries, they beat him up again before leaving. Efrain's frustrations turned to rage. But before he could hatch a plan to run away and join the revolutionaries, his father packed up all their belongings in a wagon and took the whole family to Texas. This left Efrain with a permanent cup of bitterness in his soul. And as he grew, he continued to feel what he had missed, the greatest and most glorious war that was ever fought. He could, however, enjoy the songs that came from it and never stop considering himself a loyal son and patriot of Mexico. His mood almost completely changed when they started hearing the song Una Noche Serena y Oscura. Una noche serena y oscura, cuando en silencio fuiste mi amante, las estrellas, el sol y la luna fueron testigos de nuestro cariño. Yeah, this was a song that spoke of the greatest tragedy and suffering that a man could endure. Especially the words, hoy que vengo, te encuentro en los brazos de otro hombre, y te crees la más consentida. If you find yourself in the arms of another man, and you think that you are the most beloved, pido a Dios que te maten dormida. It was so bitter and yet so beautiful. And it was true that at times a man felt that he had lost everything when his greatest love was taken by another man, though it was something that rarely really happened. But just about every man had at least a fleeting memory of losing a woman of their desire to another. And this memory could be fanned and sparked, and it could be formed into a large and deep feeling of loss. Efrain's generation in particular felt a profound and general sense of loss. La Cantina began to turn sweetly and slowly like a merry-go-round, and Efrain no longer felt thirst, pain, worries, or anxieties. He only felt the deep and wide sentiment in his heart about the life of a man, a sentiment that incorporated optimism and hope, a sentiment that communicated that life was hard, sure, and therefore it was absolutely necessary that a man should not weaken. Que tal vez por eso un hombre no se puede rajar. That is, for this reason, a man cannot break down. So the night of la borrachera en la cantina de los Tres Haces took a turn for the better when Chencha and Kika entered, and all stirred up and full of flirt, con vestidos hasta las nalgas, their lips shined with the rose-colored lipsticks, and the faces brightened with the color of rouge. Vito received them with warm and happy greetings and two cold beers paid by Andres, who knew that his urge to dance was going to be satisfied, an urge that made more urgent by his desire to forget the many graves that he dug and the deceased member of Austin society that he had placed in them. Chencha and Andres soon started tirando chanclazos norteños, while Antonio was trying to forget trying to get up enough courage to get close to Kika. His caution was directed by the absence of money in his pocket to buy her beers. But Tito had the wise instincts of a businessman, so he put another beer in front of Kika, motioning as if to Antonio's direction to give the impression that he had bought it. Vito knew that with time, two popular Chicana beauties in his bar, business was going to get riskier than he had hoped for. The dancing couples were going to attract other couples from the streets, and working men would enter not only to satisfy a powerful summer thirst, but also for the desires that Chincha and Kika could inspire. Vito knew that most of the men were married, but at times they had a powerful need to feel free to enjoy an evening como solteros under the illusion induced by beer, to escape from the heat, the worries, the pain, and from the failures of life. For this, there was nothing better than the presence of Chincha and Kika. They both had a good heart and a lot of experience. They knew how to soothe and amplify the images and concepts that men have of their machismo. Antonio boldly latched himself onto Kika and they danced al estilo Tejano Enamorado, cheek to cheek. Efrain felt like dancing also, but he could contain himself with the thought that no one could follow him and dance as well as his Esperanza. Besides, he did not want to dance with other women because he didn't want to give fuel to gossipers. He knew how to guard his reputation as a loyal husband, knowing full well lo que le pasa a los mujeriegos. During the first 2 years in Austin, he couldn't resist the desire to go to the dances in Lockhart, Maynard, and Seguin. This desire was made greater by the fact that he really missed the life that he had had in the country. And since Esperanza had the children to take care of, he found it easy to go without her. So he often enjoyed himself at the dances like a soltero. And sometimes he stayed away in La Parranda for a couple of days. Esperanza endured his indulgences, although she was far from stoically accepting them and never believed the lies associated with them. Finally, one morning when Efrain had just arrived with the sun rising to the east, she announced to him, Mira, Efrain, si tú quieres estar libre de mí, yo puedo arreglar pronto que estés libre y mis hijos de mí y mis hijos para siempre. Look, Efrain, if you want to be free from me, I can arrange for you to be free of me and our children forever. And when Efrain tried to make the supreme effort to prove his innocence by saying that they were solely motivated by his desire to see his family and close friends, Esperanza simply stared him straight in the eyes. Mira, hombre, además de insultar el honor de nuestro matrimonio, hágame el favor de no insultar mi inteligencia. Look, my man, you can say what you like, but besides insulting the honor of our marriage, please don't try to insult my intelligence. With this confrontation, Efrain knew his days of running around were over, that his desire for illusions were not honorable. He realized how much he loved Esperanza, and that he loved her more than anything, and he could not imagine life without her and their children. He knew that she not only was a good, loyal wife, but also a talented person. These realizations helped him settle down to dedicate himself to work and to the well-being of his family. His compadre and his cousin knew that he was firm about this and did nothing to try to urge him to do as they did. Though on this particular night, Kika may have been able to make him waver, but they had no need to get men on the wrong side of the road, since there were already so many waiting for their turn. The three men stayed until the bar closed, and Chanchan and Kika left with two young bachelors whose entire earning could be spent on the happy life, leaving Antonio and Andres disappointed with their hearts filled with desire. Efrain could hardly feel his weight as he walked to his house a dozen blocks away, and when he fell on the bed and went to sleep, he went to sleep quickly as the light bulb goes out. Esperanza, still awake from having felt the frustration and loneliness of waiting several hours without knowing whether something had happened to him, she slept lightly because her frustration had turned to anger and disgust, though she knew that it had been a long time since Brian had gotten drunk during the middle of the week. Besides, she developed a deep and permanent dislike for the smell of beer and had had a long association with it as an evil that invaded the security and the order of the home. Beer had been the downfall of so many good men, and now her husband was dead asleep, reeking with it. It disturbed her so much that she went to sleep with her children, and this only made her feel a deeper sense of disappointment because it reminded her of the burden that she had to endure, of Efrain's insensitivity to the overriding responsibility of family life. And she got up as usual earlier, made coffee and sat down, trying to console herself by counting her blessings. The house was being paid for and would someday belong to the children. Besides, it was certainly much better that Efrain only had been a victim of borracheras rather than a victim of a tragic accident. She was wise enough to know that Efrain was feeling the strain of the work and of the bills, and when she thought of the waste of money made necessary by his drinking, her anger, though, returned, and she became determined to demonstrate in no uncertain terms her disgust. "No vas a ir al trabajo, hombre," she announced enough with anger to pierce Efrain's heart. "Pues no me vas a dar huevos y jamón," he asked, trying to avoid the issue but running directly into it. "Well, we don't have chickens nor pigs to slaughter, and I don't know where you think I'm going to get money to send for bacon and eggs." Efrain's guilt burned through his pride like fire, but he wisely refrained from openly demonstrating, knowing that once Esperanza was angry, her cause was just. "Well, don't worry. I'll bring you all the food we need when I come home from work today," he said, with a wave of nausea invading him when he thought of the half-day work ahead. The tortillas were rubbery and the beans were watery, and the Efrain remained convinced that with eggs and bacon, his hangover would have miraculously disappeared. But his anger arose when he reached his pocket and remembered that he had bought the final round, spending the rest of his money. "Ya me voy," he announced, disgusted at himself and his economic situation. The state made less tolerable by his pronouncement, by the pronounced Kruda. When he got to the street, he saw the automobiles coming, which only reminded me that he didn't even have the wisdom to save a coin for the bus fare. But now that he would have to walk 2 miles, nursing one of the worst hangovers of his life. His anger and wounded pride, however, gave him energy and determination, and walking, besides, would give him a chance to recover by the time he got to work, and the air would be good for him. So he walked, trying to be brisk enough in order not to communicate that not only was he crudo, but desvelado. But soon he passed by the Cantina de los Tres Haces. Vito had opened the doors up wide to let the air out and was busy cleaning it. Efrain caught a whiff of the stale beer, the odor of a fichas, as he passed, and he felt revolted by those smells. So by the time he got to the corner, he was seeking a place to vomit without being seen. His shame, however, could not keep Esperanza's rubbery tortillas and watery beans in his stomach, and he was forced to empty his stomach along with all the contents of last night's drinking that were left into the gutter. And when he was through, he felt better, but he did not dare to look around to see if anybody had seen him. He got to work a half an hour late, and although this was very rarely happened, Claude Miller did not spare him of the dirty look that he gives to those who came consistently late. Efrain's next crisis came when he entered the huge kitchen with the giant copper pots filled with brewing chili and beans. To get sick at work from a hangover was an experience that he had never had, and he knew that if he was ever going to, if it was ever going to happen, this would be the day. But after an hour had passed, he knew, after drinking a lot of water, that he had been spared this further humiliation. The worst was over, and he was beginning to feel the blessings of recovery when he heard Claude Miller calling him to his office. Then Efrain, when he entered, Claude said, Efrain, are you thinking of quitting? Quitting? Why, no, sir. I've been with the company going on 5 years, and I like my job. Why do you ask? He replied, stunned. Well, Mr. Miller and I were wondering because we got a call from Montgomery Ward saying that you don't pay your bills, and Mr. Miller doesn't like it when we get calls like that besides coming in late. It usually means that a man's been drinking or gambling too much. The worst part is it gives the business community the impression that we don't pay our help adequate wage. Efrain was too overwhelmed with shame and hurt to defend himself with any dignity. I'll take care of the bill, Mr. Claude. Tell Mr. Miller that I do like my job. And he managed to tell him before returning to the kitchen. Soon his pride and hurt turned to anger, and he started doing the work of three men in order to prove how much work a good man could do. And Claude watched him through the glass window of his office as he smiled. By the time Efrain's shift ended at noon, he was tired and really disgusted with himself, his job, his economic situation, most of all with Montgomery Ward. Picked up his paycheck and he headed straight to the protest they're having called his work. But when he finally got the attention of assistant manager at Montgomery Ward, he went to get his record of his account and returned smiling. Oh, let's see now, Mr. Hernandez. Oh, yes, we did call your work, but please don't worry about it. It's just that we were afraid that maybe you had lost your job. You know how we knew that you would pay. You're one of the best customers. In fact, why don't you send the missus over to see one of the new irons that we've got? She might like it. They're very beautiful electric irons. The confrontation turned out to be just another series of defeats Ephraim had experienced that day. And he sadly, in a bit subdued, made his way to Dave Baletti's market where he could buy groceries. Dave had known Ephraim since the time that the Hernandez family had come settled in the area and completely trusted him for any amount. Besides, he had cash that day. Ephraim got eggs, a large piece of salt pork, lard, rice, beans, and other provisions. Oh, I got here a real nice beef tongue, Ephraim, already boiled. Dave told him, "Well, throw one in," Ephraim replied, "and have your delivery boy take all these things home." When Ephraim arrived at home, the feeling between him and Esperanza was tense, and he wished that he hadn't arrived home empty-handed. But luckily, Dave Baretti's truck pulled up with Dave driving himself sooner than Ephraim had expected. Dave brought the order and was with a picture of cheerfulness when he placed the boxes on the kitchen table. "Boy, if my wife would not bawl me out, I'd stay and get some of this tongue in chili that you folks make. I already know how good a cook Efrain Esperanza is." When David Varela left, Esperanza went into the bedroom to be with the children, and Efrain quietly and with a delicate sense of duty put the food in its proper place and began cooking the tongue and chile verde, a dish that he always cooked. It did have great curative powers in his mind. It was one of the few ways that he could demonstrate to Speranza that he was sorry. They ate supper without speaking, although this was usually the time when Speranza would ask about how things were at the Chileria. The meal proved to be a great success, especially since Esperanza had recovered her ability to make delicious tortillas de harina a mano and had made refried beans in the manner that Efrain had expected that morning. That night, Esperanza fell asleep early, exhausted from the near sleepless night, while Efrain nursed his wounds and sighed with relief that the day was over, as well as hangover. The thought of the day's humiliation still left him a little stunned, but as he heard the soft and delicate sounds of Esperanza's breathing, he thought, "The dinero. Todo se trata de dinero. A veces uno pierde el amor y el cariño por falta de dinero. Money. It has to do with money. There are times that one even loses their love and affection for lack of money."